What do you want to talk about? Welcome to Life Matters with host Kim Alberts. This is the place to be for discussion, expression, and life matters. Now, sit back, relax, and enjoy some straight talk and fun. Here's Kim Alberts.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Life Matters. It's a beautiful day here in Central Illinois, and we are rapidly moving to a close of summer. And schools around here are starting earlier and earlier. So I thought today we would start to discuss the whole going back to school theme. And our guest today is Kathleen Kornhamer. She is a board-certified teacher of special ed and a retired teacher of the Chicago school system for over 30 years. So welcome, Kathy, and thanks very much for joining me.
Oh, well, thank you for inviting me.
One of the things that I want to talk about today is how can parents really promote academic success with their kids?
Well, that's a very broad topic. There's lots of different ways. First of all, we have to realize that parents are the child's first teacher. Children learn to speak and walk and eat, do all kinds of things, and they learn those from their parents. So teachers really, you know, even the kindergarten teacher is not their first teacher. Parents are their first teachers. And as parents, we have control over quite a lot of our children's destiny when they're young. And as they go to school, we still have to make sure that they get enough sleep, that their diet is appropriate for their age, that we have family rules, and that we teach values at home. Then when they come to school, they will be prepared to learn. Getting back to diet, one of the important things that I have found, especially for children with learning issues, is that they eat some kind of protein in the morning. Our brain is made up of a protein, and it seems that children do better when they have some kind of a protein as opposed to sugar, which gives them a boost, but then they crash around 10 o'clock in the morning before lunch. So some kind of protein. If we don't have time for eggs in the morning, there's peanut butter and jelly. My daughter used to like peanut butter with bananas sandwich. So any kind of a protein in the morning would be good. Then to promote academic success at home, we have to help our children set goals. If a child has a goal, I mean, we're watching the Olympics these days, you know, you see that they have a particular goal in mind, then they can achieve that goal because everything in their life, then they can reflect, is this going to help me reach my goal? Well, children are like that too. So every child should have some goals for the school year before they start. Another thing parents can do is to know what the core curriculum is for that grade level. Hopefully that's something that parents have already done so that they can start preparing their children over the summer for what they're supposed to know for the next grade level. I had my two grandchildren this summer for 6 weeks, and they came with a list of what the core curriculum is for the next year. And boy, that kindergarten list was very extensive.
It's never too early to start preparing.
No, not at all. Some things that we can do at home is to make sure that as soon as a child can sit in your lap, you can read to them. And make sure that they're looking over your shoulder, looking at the book. They will eventually learn that the words go with those funny little squiggles on the page. I learned to read by sitting on my mother's lap. I had a favorite book. It was called Katie the Kitten. And she just read it to me every night until finally, yes, I had it memorized, but I had it memorized and looked at the page, and eventually those words then become part of your memory. So reading to children is extremely important.
And, you know, I think with all of the computer and the computerized activities, I think reading has kind of disappeared, but it's something that we can't really stress enough, isn't it?
Oh, no, not at all. And I think that, I don't know, my grandchildren love to be read to. I have a special book that I keep at my condo so that it says, I don't know, Grandma's going to read to me or something. And they're mostly fairy tales, but they just love getting that book and climbing in my lap. Even the 9-year-old, they love to be read to. And I found with my own children that even though once they can learn to read and then all of a sudden we're, you read to me, you know, children want still for you to read to them. It helps your relationship. It's a soothing kind of thing for them. And so even when my children were older, I would always read them. Maybe we'd sit down at breakfast and I'd read while they ate, something that maybe they wouldn't have read themselves, like Huckleberry Finn when somebody was in fifth or sixth grade, or something that they wouldn't read on their own, was a little bit too difficult for them. I would read to them even when they were older. I mean, I taught in Chicago for almost 35 years, and I would read Greek mythology to seventh and eighth grade boys who, you know, were tough, you know, considered themselves to be tough kids, mm-hmm. and they really liked it. You know, they got a kick out of it. So,
I can remember reading the Mercer Mayer series, the Little Critters books, to my kids when they were little, and that was such a wonderful series because it always was, you know, the little critters are going to the dentist, or, you know, I was so scared, or the little critters go to the zoo. It was always something that helped prepare for what they were going to do. It was such a great way to help prepare for what we were going to do. Are there any books that you would recommend that parents get for their kids to read to them?
Well, you know, this summer they have a reading program at our library, and when the children read a certain number of books, you keep track of it and you bring it back, and the businesses in the community, like they got a chocolate donut from the bakery down the block and different things like that. So we went to the library, and there's just so many books. And I think the most important thing is to know what interests your child. My 9-year-old, she went right to all the mystery stories. She already knows what she wants. And sometimes she likes science fiction, but she likes mysteries. The little one, is all girl. She wants fairy tales and princesses. And so, you know, their taste in books was different. But as long as they like it and they enjoy it, I think that that's the most important thing. Of course, I love Dr. Seuss. Mm-hmm. I like it because of the rhyming words and because the kids, they repeat it. As you're reading it, eventually they learn the lines and they say it back to them. And it's silly, the Cat in the Hat, and the Cat in the Hat comes back. There's a locket in my pocket. You know, there was a lot of rhyming things. And one of the important things for young children is to learn that those phonemes, those sounds. That's even more important at the beginning than learning that a sound goes with a letter. Just knowing that there are sounds and that some sounds are alike, like locket and pocket and the rhyming words. And, you know, silly things. My kids liked the I Wish I Had Duck Feet and Wacky Wednesday. And then as they get older, sometimes, you know, they like the fantasies. The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I have a niece who actually wrote her own book when she was in sixth grade, and that was after she read all the American Girl dolls and Little House on the Prairie, and she liked the historical fiction, and she wrote one of her own. So a lot of it depends on what the child, you know, is interested in. When they're young, there's if you don't know what kind of literature the kid might like, you can go and look up the Caldecott Award winners, and those usually are picture books, like Where the Wild Things Are by Sundek. There's a whole list of them. You know, my 20-month-year-old grandson right now, he likes a book called Goodnight Gorilla, and he goes and picks it up and has Dad read it. It hardly has any words in it, but it's about a woman who who owns a zoo, I guess, and she says goodnight to all the animals and then goes to bed, but the gorilla steals the keys and then goes and lets all the animals out, and they all come in the house, and he just thinks that's hysterical. He's 20 months old, you know?
Okay.
So, you know, of course, my favorites are Little Engine That Could, you know, because that teaches never give up. Some of the Peter Rabbit stories by Beatrice Potter. I always liked those when I was little. But the Caldecott Award winners are your picture books. And then there's Newbery Award winners, which are American Children's Literature an award. And Shel Silverstein, that's one of my favorite sets of books. My kids just love those so much that when one went away to college, he took them with. So then I had to buy new ones for my daughter. And now they're still discussing who's got what. Now they both have their own households, but they liked Where the Sidewalk Ends, Falling Up, A Light in the Attic. And I even took those to school. And once again, you know, the seventh and eighth graders, they loved the silly poems, and just they enjoyed being read to. So, I mean, there's just such a wealth out there.
Okay. Well, I think we could fill a show talking about the importance of reading, but we're going to need to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about the importance of communicating between the parents and the child's teacher and how that can really help a child academically. So when we come back, we'll be spending some more time with Kathy, and you can call in with questions. So we'll be right back.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Racism. Healing. Oneness of humankind. It is time to join millions of people all over the world who openly talk about racial healing. Some of us are not sure how to tread when discussing race and culture. Until now. Tune in to A Safe Place to Talk About Race with host Sharon E. Davis. Engage with experts and notables. Have a question but are not sure how to ask it? Test it out with our show. It's a safe harbor to explore views and situations that we face every day. A Safe Place to Talk About Race airs live every Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Want the best life has to offer for you, your family, and friends? There are a number of community-based programs and resources available to individuals for low cost or no cost. No need surfing the net or spending hours on the phone. Now there's a radio program devoted to bringing you the information you need. Tune in to Outreach Today with hosts Melissa Jenkins-Simon and Diane Stafford and get the tools to success. Our program promotes the benefits and services of CI Incorporated, providing health and social services over a wide spectrum of resources and agencies. We want to help you. Tune in to Outreach Today, Wednesdays at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com. You're listening to Life Matters with your host, Kim Alberts. It's time for some participation from you. Call into the show at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Now, back to Life Matters.
Okay, we're back with Kathy Kornhaber, and we are talking about the school year and school issues with your child. And, Kathy, what are some things that a parent could do to help improve communication between themselves and their child's teacher?
Well, first off, usually schools have some kind of a meet and greet at the beginning of the year or an open house. Make sure that both, if possible, parents go, but for sure at least one parent should go and meet the teacher. Meet them before your kids get there, if possible, so that you're on an even keel. Remember that teachers are people too, and they like to be respected as teachers should respect parents, so that they know that they are both equal partners in this endeavor of teaching your child both academics and values. In this day and age, some schools have computer programs where once the school year started, you can find out what the teacher is expecting of your child. Sometimes they even have nightly homework on it, or blogs. But in Chicago, we had a problem that a lot of our kids did not have computers. So you're back to old school, which would mean telephone, email the parents if they had it. If not, then the class, you might write notes back and forth. With some children, I had an actual assignment book that I would sign to make sure that they had copied their homework down. The parent would sign it that the child had done it. There's different things that you can set up with the parent to better communicate with what's going on for your child. If you have concerns with what's going on in the classroom, I think first it helps to approach the teacher themselves. And I tell teachers that when you talk to a parent, always say something positive first before you go into whatever the issue is. Parents can do the same. You know, Johnny really enjoys your art class, but, you know, and then go into whatever issue there might be.
And you brought up such an important point that both the parents and the teachers are partners, and they're both working to try and help the child in every way they can. And they both need to really remember that when the time comes for them to come together and try and talk about whatever problem is happening. It's never supposed to be an adversarial kind of problem.
Correct. And also, I think that sometimes when the child comes home with tales of what happened, that when you approach the teacher, if you just say, you know, Johnny came home and told me this story, and I know sometimes children exaggerate, so I thought I would check it out with you, and give the teacher the benefit of the doubt before you go running to the administrator, I think sometimes you find out that, yes, maybe it was a little exaggerated, maybe the teacher just had a rough day, you know, depending on what the issue is. But talking negatively right out front or
things
trying to intimidate the teacher, that doesn't really help much.
Things just weren't the way the child suggested they were many times, too.
Correct. You know, the children, you know, see things sometimes
differently,
right. They internalize whatever happened, and maybe the teacher didn't even realize that she hurt the child's feelings or whatever, and it needs to be talked about. I know that when my daughter was, I don't know, fourth or fifth grade, she had an issue because somebody had written something very not nice about her on a bathroom wall in the girls' bathroom. And every day I would say, well, did you tell the teacher? And she said, yes. I said, well, did the teacher tell the janitor to get it off the wall? Because in Chicago, graffiti is a big thing, and it comes down that night. You know, it just doesn't sit there. Well, this went on for days. I finally went to the teacher, and I said, you know, I have this problem. You know, I know that she's such a wonderful teacher, and Tara loves being in your class, but she says that she has told you that this is happening. Is that true? And the teacher said, well, yes, but it's been so busy, and the janitor's busy. And, you know, so I just said, you know, I know everyone's very busy, and, you know, sometimes I know the parents have more power than teachers. So how about if I go to the administrator and I tell her that I want it taken down? And then, of course, immediately after I said that, she said, it'll be down by tomorrow. So,
yeah.
Sometimes, you know, you have to go to the teacher first. If I had gone straight to the administrator, I think that would have set up an adversarial relationship between me and that teacher.
And there is a chain of command, and parents have to remember to respect that chain as well.
Yes, yes, I do think so. And, you know, it doesn't help your child, especially if you can't get them out of that classroom, to have that kind of a relationship. It's also very important that parents don't talk negatively in front of the child about a teacher. That doesn't help the child, and it doesn't help the situation at all. So if you do have negative thoughts about the teacher, kind of keep them to yourself and deal with it, but I don't think you need to do it in front of the child.
What are some issues other than homework that would be really important that a teacher know about that maybe should be communicated to them?
Well, first of all, medical issues are extremely important. I had a child in my room that had seizures, and I was in a mobile unit at the time. Mobile units in Chicago are like little prefabs because the school is overcrowded, so they put them up on the parking lot. Well, mine didn't even have a PA system to the office, so I had to send a child, two children, to go run and get help. That mother knew that that child had a brain tumor and never told me.
Well, that's very scary. Very dangerous.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Another time, it wasn't quite as scary, but I was teaching day camp at the time, which I did through college, for the park district. And I'm calling the roll out, and this little girl is not responding. And finally, somebody poked me and said, "She can't hear you. She's deaf." You know, so, I mean, that would have been something that I would have liked to have known ahead of time also. So any kind of medical issue, and that includes glasses, because children will often take their glasses off if you don't know that they're supposed to be wearing them. They don't like wearing them. They take them off. They hide them in their book bag or whatever. And allergies, food or environmental. And if your child has any kind of a learning problem or ADHD, which sometimes is not recognized, the child might not have an IEP if they're ADHD. They may if they have a learning disability or a cognitive delay or something, but they might not have it for ADHD. But your teacher should know those things ahead of time. I know a lot of times parents say, "Oh, it's a new teacher. Let them start out the new year." But I think you have a better chance of it working out if you let the teacher know ahead of time. And then, of course, there's emotional issues. If there's any kind of recent big events that happened, like a divorce or a death of a grandparent or a parent, anything that the child might be dealing with, I think it's important for the teacher to know that ahead of time. And then on a positive note, teachers need to know what your child's interested in and what are his or her strengths so that we can teach to those. It helps to know that the child is into horseback riding, for instance. And then you make sure that you get some books about horses for the classroom library, or maybe on career day have a furrier come in to show how he changes horseshoes or whatever. You know, it just helps to know what the kid's interested in.
What are some ways that parents might intervene if they see that their child is really struggling?
Well, first off, I think you need to listen to the child. You don't have to agree with everything that they say, but I think that the child should know that you're listening and that you can active listen. You know, "I hear you saying this," or, you know, "Yes, I understand that you're having a problem with that." And then I think you need to talk to the teacher about it. And if possible, observe the classroom. Children often... like I was talking to my son-in-law the other day about this, because he's really into music and he's very right-brained. And he had trouble in school for that reason. Most teachers are left-brained. You know, we are very organized. We like math, science. You know, even if it's into reading, it's more a structured kind of skill that we have. Whereas right-brained children like the arts and they're creative, and they sometimes have trouble fitting that little niche into the classroom. So we have to make sure that the teacher knows your child's learning style. Is your child very visual? Are they auditory? Or are they kinesthetic? Do they have to touch things to learn? And I think that if we might have to sit in the classroom and observe and see, is this teacher using a multisensory approach when they teach so that every child has a chance of learning it, because every child has a different learning style. So we may want to observe that, and if the teacher is not doing that, then you can either deal with it through administration, or you may, if there's no other classroom for your child to be in some small school, that happens, you might have to compensate at home by making sure that you're teaching to your child's strengths. If possible, then all that fails. You still may need to get a tutor for your child. And it's important to not just teach subjects, but teach actual study skills, how to go about studying, how to be organized. And then if your child is still struggling after all that, then it might be time to be screened by a professional.
And that takes a lot of effort and a lot of time. And I think sometimes parents don't feel like they're really capable of assessing all that. But I think parents really are able to get that involved and really do their homework and follow up on all of that.
Yes, I think that we have to realize that the parenting is a career. It's an important career, a career that nobody really prepares us for. But it is a career, and it's a choice. And it takes time, and it takes effort. And if anyone has a computer, there's almost any information that you want on the computer. And there's parent groups out there galore. There's a group called CHAD, which is for children with attention deficit disorder. There's dyslexia groups. There's children with learning disabilities, cognitive delay. There's parent groups, and they have websites with a wealth of information about multiple intelligences or multiple sensory approaches.
And when we come back from our break, we're going to spend some time talking about ways that parents can get involved, maybe at home, or get involved with their children to help them when they are struggling in school. There's a lot of ways parents can be very helpful and not even really think of it, I think. So we'll be right back and spend more time talking with Kathy here on Life Matters.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you a homeowner who's trying to save on energy bills and go green at the same time? Tune into Energy Saving in the Home, brought to you by 521 Compressor Saver and Home Energy Consultants, with host Gary Parr and Dennis Seltzer. They have saved homeowners just like you as much as 65% on energy bills through energy efficiency practices. You'll learn about conservation, products, and services to reduce energy consumption and save you money. Be sure to listen to Energy Saving in the Home, live every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Do the adventures of Indiana Jones leave you curious about this exotic and unusual profession? If so, don't miss Indiana Jones, Myth, Reality, and 21st Century Archaeology with Dr. Joseph Schuldenrein. You'll learn about forensics, ancient civilizations, and human origins. Listen to Dr. Schuldenrein and colleagues discuss their excavations and related archaeological topics, ranging from the unique to the sublime, and yes, even the mundane. Indiana Jones, Myth, Reality, and 21st Century Archaeology, live Wednesday, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific Time, on Voice America Variety.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com. You're listening to Life Matters with your host, Kim Alberts. It's time for some participation from you. Call into the show at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Now, back to Life Matters.
You know, Kathy, I think one of the biggest problems that many kids have, and even many adults today, is the organizational skills. And it can be such a devastating thing for them in terms of consequences if they are not organized and getting everything together. And sometimes something as simple as a folder system could be all it's needed, but talk a little bit about organizational skills and how people, parents, could help organize their child.
Okay. Any parent who's had a child with poor organization knows that it's important to deal with it. First of all, a lot of times I say, well, you should have a desk and it should be all equipped and so forth and so on, but a lot of us don't have the room that every child has their own desk. And sometimes if a child has an issue with staying on task, you might be better off having them at the kitchen table so that you will be aware of what they're doing while you're doing whatever you do after work. Most of us do work, so you have to cook dinner or do dishes or whatever. So I always liked to have my children, whoever was having the issues at the time, at the kitchen table. Now, to organize their things that they need, I put them in a basket so that in the basket they would have their pencils and paper and their sharpener, pens for math, a ruler, a calculator, maybe some graph paper, compass, protractor, depending on their level. Always a dictionary handy and a thesaurus. And I think it's important also to have a globe or an atlas to learn geography. You know, now the Olympics are going on. We hear about these countries, and I have to go look up myself. Oh, my goodness, where is that country? So it's important that we study geography, and sometimes it helps the child to understand where exactly they are in relationship to us. Also, index cards are important to have in the little basket. So for flashcards, for science and math, whatever, they are just invaluable. So all those little things go in the basket, so when they sit down to do their homework, the basket comes out, and they're ready. The beginning of the school year, every parent is very good about, well, not every, but most parents are very good about making sure that their child is ready for school. New book bag, or at least the book bag is cleaned out. We buy folders or whatever the teacher says that we need. Some children have a very hard time with a separate spiral for each subject. If your teacher is flexible, you might be better off with a binder system where you have a 6-3-ring binder and have separate sections for each subject. That way the child just has to carry one binder with them for all their subjects, and they don't have to rummage around in the locker or the desk for what they need. If the teacher refuses to do that, or, you know, sometimes you have 5 different teachers in junior high, everybody's got their own idea, I made sure that the spirals match the color of the textbook so that we would cover the math book in red, and then they would have a red folder that matched the math book, so that when it was time for math, they could go to their locker and just pull out the red things, blue for another subject or whatever. Also, when they do homework, of course, part of the issue, especially with kids with attention problems, is that they do it. I swear I saw them do it. The teacher calls the next day to say Johnny didn't have their homework. They didn't put it in their book bag, or they thought they did, but they didn't. So every night you have to make sure that everything is put back into the book bag where it belongs. Hopefully there's a special section in the spiral, in the 3-ring binder for homework, so it goes right in there. So when they get to school, they know exactly where their homework papers are. Or a special folder that says homework, so it goes to and from school. And it gets back into the book bag. And of course, then we also have to have an assignment notebook or some kind of a calendar. I know my daughter preferred being a teacher. I had lesson plans at home and sometimes had old lesson plan books. She preferred to have that, where she had a lot of room to write down whatever she needed for each subject. Calendars are good because then you can sit down when they have a long project and say, okay, let's break it down. What are we going to do this week? What do you need to do for this, or what do you need to do for that? Which brings to another thing, that children need choices. It helps when you do homework if she lays out, this is what I have to do today, it's in the assignment notebook, and then you say, well, which one would you like to do first? And just that little bit of a choice sometimes makes the child more cooperative. Of course, they know they have to complete all of it, but at least they get a choice of what they want to do first and second. And then we have clothes. Children often are late for school in the morning because their clothes aren't where they thought they were going to be. So it's important this time of year to clean out your child's closet, make sure that everything is in order. They should be there to help you come up with some kind of a system of how they're going to do it. And maybe Sunday night, if your child has a hard time getting organized every day, the outfits should be picked out for the week. You know, the weather doesn't change that much. As long as you use layers of clothing, this is what we're going to wear Monday, Tuesday, and so forth.
And organization is a skill that I think we can work on for our entire lives and improve, but it really is important that we start helping our kids when they're young.
Yes.
Because it's something that they can continue to build on, and it has to be there throughout their entire education.
Yes, it does. And even as an adult, we have to be organized. I mean, as I get older, I'm forgetting more things, but I will think to myself, where would I have put that? And just because I'm very habitual about things, then I find it. There it is, where I would have put it if I had it in my hand today. So sometimes, and I tell this when I work with adults that have ADHD, your best friend is a habit. Because once you've created that habit, that every single time you finish your homework, you put it in the book bag. Every time I get a bill, I put it in this basket. You don't think about it then after a while. It's just habitual, like we don't think about brushing our teeth. And that's a good friend for someone that has attention problems.
Now, what kind of behaviors would a parent see in a child that they suspect might be having attention deficit disorder or attention deficit hyperactive disorder?
Okay, first of all, I want to say that even as a parent, it's sometimes difficult when children are young, really young, to know that they're having attention problems, because we just think, oh, well, that's my little girl. She's just really active. Or, you know, boys will be boys, I hear a lot. So it kind of shows up more as they get ready for school or even once they start school. And some of the things that you look out for are restlessness, fidgety, shaking their legs all the time. Some people say they buzz around the environment like a mosquito,
mm-hmm.
or a bullet ricocheting off a wall. You know, I mean, just really, really hyper. I mean, that's pretty obvious. And that usually happens in boys. Boys tend to be more that way than girls. Problems remain seated. They want to get up and down all the time. They're constantly moving. They might be easily distracted by extraneous stimuli, like the tag in the back of the shirt or the seam on a sock. Sometimes they have some sensory issues that way. I have one author that I like. He says that ADHD kids are like a moth to the flame. They always want whatever is the brightest thing in the room. So, of course, that's TV, video games. You know, they get attracted to those things. But when it's time to do homework, the eraser on the end of the pencil might be the most exciting thing in the room to him. And that might be what he's playing with instead of doing his work. Children that have attention problems sometimes have trouble taking turns. They want to butt in all the time. They can't wait for you to get off the telephone. They have to blurt things out right away, which also brings back then to the impulsivity, and they do things without thinking. This causes a lot of problems when they get to be teenagers, because now they're impulsive and their hormones are raging. So that gets them into a lot of issues.
Not a good combination at all.
No. Could be accidents, could be trouble with the law, trouble with the drugs because they self-medicate. To a true ADHD person, there's just the here and the now. I don't think about yesterday, so I can't learn from my past behavior. And I don't think about the future, so I don't think about the consequences. So it's just impulsive. They have problems completing things, homework, schoolwork, chores, maybe even practicing a particular sport, if it's or a piano, something that they find boring, which would be like the scales on a piano or practicing your timetables. They don't like to do that. trouble concentrating unless something is new or novel. Children, even with ADHD, tend to love things that are new, so they will pay attention to that. Highly interesting, like video games, or sometimes frightening. They will pay attention to that for short periods of time. Children pay attention to things that they are really interested in, so that, I mean, I could never understand why my son, who has dyslexia and ADHD, could follow the basketball coach and do all these intricate plays, but couldn't remember to take the garbage out when it was his turn. You know what I mean? It's just, but he was interested in those things. And so if they're really interested in something, they will pay attention to it. And that's tricky for parents because you think, oh, well, she does crafts for hours. There's no problem with her attention. Well, she likes crafts. So you have to pay attention to how do they deal with things that maybe aren't too exciting for them. They like to they have trouble shifting from one activity to another. Sometimes they don't like change. They have difficulty playing quietly sometimes. They constantly talk to themselves or make sound effects. Talk a lot, you know, motor mouth, just on and on and on. And we talked about they interrupt. Sometimes they don't seem to be listening. The statistic says that about they only hear about 30% of what is said. And then, of course, we get to the disorganization, which we have somewhat talked about. There always seems to be this black hole between school and home where all the notices of open house and all those things get lost. They sometimes don't bring the papers home they were supposed to bring home. Their book bag's a mess. Their room's a mess. Their desk is a mess. They don't know where their paperwork is. They have trouble with time management. And then, once again, because of the impulsiveness, they take high risks. You know, some of the additional things, they might have really poor handwriting, trouble writing what they're thinking about, which I always corrected by getting the tape recorder. So if the child said, I can't write, I can't think of what to write, and they, you know that they're really creative and they talk a mile a minute, then I would tape what they would like to write, and then they play the tape back and do the writing after that.
We're going to be taking a short break, and when we come back, we've got a caller. So we'll be right back and talk to our caller after this.
Okay.
Streaming live. The leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
We all want to be happy, but consider that conventional thinking is what got us where we are now. The good news is there's so much more to know that can give us a new and higher perspective. Tune in to A New View of Life with host Kathy Kirk as we unlock the conversational gridlock in America by exploring new ideas and new information on every aspect of life which is needed to move us not just forward, but upward. A New View of Life airs live every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Variety Channel.
In the spirit of Have Couch, Will Travel, Dr. Carol Lieberman creates a haven of sanity in an increasingly insane world. Each day we are bombarded with news of events that have never crossed our wildest nightmares. Society is spiraling out of control and everyone is reeling from it. But now there's an answer. The best way to keep sane in this insane world is to tune in to Dr. Carol's Couch on Voice America. Dr. Carol, a certified media psychiatrist, will broadcast live from her Beverly Hills office every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Call or log in and get help with whatever is sending you reeling, whenever you need a soothing voice to calm and advise you. That's Dr. Carol's Couch every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, here on America's Voice, VoiceAmerica.com.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one Internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com. You're listening to Life Matters with your host, Kim Alberts. It's time for some participation from you. Call into the show at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Now, back to Life Matters.
And we're back with Kathy Kornhaber.
And we have a caller. Dora, what's your question for us?
I just had a question about my son is starting kindergarten this fall, and he's making a transition from private school to public school, and plus kindergarten, so everything is all new, and I just want to help in trying to calm him down, and help for me, too, to just let him go so I won't be so upset when he's gone for the first day of school.
I hear a little anxiety there. I don't know. What about you, Kathy?
Yeah, I think we all remember that first day when they start school. And sometimes I think it's more scary for the parents than the child. I think one of the things that you can do if the school will allow it is if the teachers are there before school starts, maybe take him up and let him see the room. And maybe the teacher would let him interact with some of the materials that are in the room, whether they be blocks or whatever they have at the kindergarten level, just so he kind of has a walkthrough with you, and that'll help him be a little more secure. There are several books, and I can't remember the name of one that last year we read to my granddaughter because she couldn't tie her shoes, and it was a book about how this little girl was going to kindergarten, and she dreamt that everybody in kindergarten could tie their shoes but her, you know. And, of course, it goes through and finds out that not, you know, most of the kids couldn't tie their shoes either. But if you go online and look under books and then put whatever the issue is, they'll give you a list of books that you might be able to get from the library to about school anxiety or starting kindergarten and what to expect, and read a few books with him. And that might help.
I always drove by my kids' school, too, and said, you know, there's your new school, and boy, won't you have fun, and things like that to make it a little more familiar before they ever got there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, of course, it's helpful if they have older brothers or sisters. But if they don't, then, yeah, you kind of have to take those walkthroughs on your own with them.
So,
did that answer your question?
They helped him out with the tying the shoe issue, but he still doesn't have that all the way either, so we're working on that, too.
Yeah, it takes some time. Some children, the fine motor control comes a little bit later than others.
Mm-hmm.
So not to worry. My mother used to say, when they're walking down the aisle and they're married, no one will know how old they were when they tied their shoe for the first time.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks.
Thank you.
You know, one of the things that you had talked about earlier, Kathy, was handwriting. And well, I can remember having to do hours and hours of penmanship drills. And it didn't seem like kids do that anymore, do they?
Well, a lot of the school districts have cut back. It's not that they don't teach it at all, but they've certainly cut back on the amount of time and the emphasis that they put on it, partly because, well, they say because of the word processing on the computers and everything's typed. But let's face it, it's also because of the pressure for the test scores. So we have to concentrate. You know, instead of taking half an hour out to do penmanship, we have to push that half hour into the reading schedule because we're going to be judged as teachers by how well these kids read. So instead of an hour of reading day, we might do 2 hours. So anything that's not on the test sometimes gets pushed to the side. I remember when they weren't testing social studies. That was always on the back burner then, to the point where the kids didn't know the name of the city that they lived in. I mean, that's an exaggeration, but you know what I'm saying. It's just, it's not tested, and so the school district finds it not that important. It is a controversial subject. Frankly, I think that it's important for fine motor control. I think that cursive also is creative. I think that every child likes to put that little flourish on the letters that matches their personality, and it's an expression of themselves. And I also read an article in the Wall Street Journal that came out last year that said there were a number of benefits to both cognition and memory that come from writing by hand, that we learn something that's another sense. You know, every time we learn a skill, it only can come in through our five senses, and one of those senses is touch. So if you're writing the science words with the definition, or you're writing your timetable, sometimes that impresses more on the memory than just studying it with flashcards, or typing something on the computer does not get the same activity for your brain as it does when you're actually moving your hand.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, that's still controversial and up in the air right now, but I would think that even as parents, we might still want to keep that skill up. I know that I have handwritten letters from my mom that are just treasures, you know, and I think I look at it and I know that that's her handwriting. And I think it's a shame that kids are not going to be writing in cursive. And as a special education teacher, I found that kids that had learning disabilities often read better and wrote better when they learned cursive, because it's like an automatic, here's one word. Whereas kids that have learning disabilities, all the letters sometimes run together. Whereas in cursive, they're connected, and then there's a space, and there's another word, which they don't always do when they print. So I found cursive to be helpful in that way.
We've got just a couple minutes before we need to end. Kathy, what are you reading right now?
I'm reading Help.
You're reading Help?
Yeah, I saw the movie, but I'm reading the book now. It's really interesting. Brings back memories of what it was like to live through those times, and thank goodness some things have changed since then. Maybe not as much as everyone would like, but so that's what I'm reading.
All right.
I would just like to say a few things about being a parent, and I think that as a teacher, I had to make a creed, and I tried to make one as a parent also. It's good to list what you value so that you know that at some point you're passing those values on to your children. And I think we need to also remember that we are the example. Sometimes you have to say to yourself, I am the adult. I am the adult.
Yeah.
Because especially teenagers can push our buttons and get us to that place where the child in us wants to come out. So as a parent, we need to be positive, always look and enjoy our children. They each have such wonderful gifts to give us. And be calm and organized. And then I always say, be consistent, persistent, and thankful for each small step.
That's great advice. We all need to remember that, the joy that our children bring us, even when they may not be bringing us a whole lot of joy right at that very moment.
That's right. That's right. You have to think back to that time that they were up at 3 o'clock in the morning and you were rocking them thinking, oh, someday I'll miss this. And when they're older, you do.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Kathy, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk with us today. You've given us a lot to think about and some very helpful advice that I think people can take into the school year and hopefully help their kids get off to a great start. So thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.